Bruce Williamson is involved with the project called Rail Future, and he's with me today. Is there anything in your background, Bruce, which made you interested in this subject?
Not particularly, no. I don't come from a great family of railway people. You know, it's just that I prefer to go by train. You know, you don't find driving down the motorway much fun, really. So I sort of just support railways generally. So I joined this organisation called Rail Future, which campaigns for a better railway, and I'm sort of joining in where I can, really.
Have you travelled by train a lot?
I don't know, really. I've never been a rail commuter. You know, I'm not one of those people who sort of gets squashes into the Sardine Express at 7:30 every morning, but more of a sort of occasional rail user. But you know, I support railways for all sorts of, you know, environmental and practical reasons, and it's just my preferred mode of travel. And when you see sort of money being poured into road building and railways being left behind, I think it sort of prompted me to join, really, and to get involved a bit.
When people think about rail travel, I think the first thing they think about how expensive it is.
Well, yeah, indeed, and I agree that our fares are too high. They are the most expensive in Europe, and that's one of the things we campaign for, really. You know, reduced fares and more to the point, a more simplified ticket system. You know, you can get these sort of, if you book weeks in advance, you can get a sort of super off-peak apex return, which is only valid on certain trains, and then people get caught out because they get off at the wrong station or buy the wrong ticket or get on the wrong train, and it's just a bewildering complex mess, really. You know, it would be nice, wouldn't it, if you buy a single or a return, simple as that, and it was affordable and reasonably priced, and that's the sort of thing we push for.
And the last two train journeys I did, I split the ticket, which meant I, instead of sort of getting one ticket through, I got tickets to various stations, you know, which I didn't get off at any of them, but that worked out cheaper. But British Rail don't tell people about this.
No, they don't, although it is above board. Yeah, I mean, a really good example is if you're going to Birmingham, get a ticket from Bristol to Cheltenham, and then get another ticket from Cheltenham to Birmingham. As long as the train actually stops at Cheltenham, you're quite right, and most of them do, you're quite right, you don't have to get off, you'll save yourself about 15 or 20 quid. It's absolutely amazing, and the tickets are totally valid. And, yeah, it's madness, and that's a sort of simplification of the ticketing system that we push for, and we need more of, really.
But people also associate trains with hold-ups and lateness. Why are there so many?
Well, I mean, what are the problems? I mean, I suppose any sort of complex system has the potential to go wrong, doesn't it? And the railway network is overloaded. There's very little spare capacity on the lines in this country, and they've also suffered from decades of underinvestment. So we're playing catch up, really. And things like the electrification of the Great Western Main Line are very, very welcome, but that should have been done 30 years ago. And obviously major works like that cause disruption. And so, yeah, it's a railway system that's under stress and desperately needs more capacity and more investment.
But it doesn't seem to have the same excuses as travel on the roads as far as lateness is concerned, because you never know on any given day how many people are going to be driving, but they must know which trains are going.
Sure, but there are things like engineering works.
Yeah.
Weather is unpredictable, of course. You know, things like the thing that happened was it year before last at Dawlish, when the sea washed away the rail lines. You can't predict that. You can't predict flooding. You know, with the best will in the world, things will inevitably go wrong. But, you know, punctuality is not bad. My experience of travelling by train is that generally punctuality is pretty good. You know, the rail companies are forced to publish punctuality figures however often it is, once a year, once a quarter, I don't know. And, you know, some of them are better than others, but they're all in the sort of 80, 90%. So that's, you know, moderately good, I suppose.
So what actually do they campaign for, and why?
Well, it's quite simply, we campaign for a better railway. And that means, I mentioned just now, you know, the fare structure and the level of fares. You know, the rail tickets in this country are too expensive. We campaign to sort of get stations and lines reopened. We campaign to get more freight on the railways, more lorries off the road, and improvements such as electrification. And, you know, the rail travel is a much more environmentally friendly way of travelling. And, you know, I think things like lorries thundering past, people want them travelling by train instead, you know, more freight on train. There's sort of environmental benefits. Everyone benefits if we have a better railway. And experience has shown that where you provide decent services, people will use them. Locally, the Seven Beaches are a really good example of that. That a few years ago, campaigners sort of got investment in the Seven Beach line to improve the frequency of service, and the number of passengers using it went up and up and up. If you build it, they will come, as the old saying goes, and we want more of that, really.
Well, so why are electric trains better than diesel?
Well, the reason we campaign for electrification is that electric trains have all sorts of advantages. I mean, diesel, I mean, it's an oil-based thing, and we've seen the price of oil be very volatile over the last few years. So we don't really want to sort of be tied into a future fuel source that we have to import, and we don't know what the price is going to be like. But electric trains, they're faster, they're more reliable. You mentioned reliability just a moment ago. Electric trains break down less often than diesel trains. They're cheaper to run, they're cheaper to buy, they're quieter, they pollute less. Well, they don't pollute at all. The train itself doesn't pollute, but obviously the power stations do, but the power stations pollute much less than the diesel train would. And it can use things like solar power and wind power and all sorts of green energy. And another advantage is that when electric trains are slowing down, they pump electricity back into the grid. They sort of recycle the electricity. It's called regenerative braking. And it means that overall they're much more efficient.
So they're cheaper, they're quieter for people living near the railway?
A little, yeah. I mean, if an electric train goes by 100 miles an hour compared to a diesel, you won't hear much difference. But in many other ways, they are quieter, yeah.
And they've got more seats?
Not necessarily. I mean, the new electric trains we're getting for the Great Western Main Line will have more capacity. And I suppose the engine takes up a little bit of space, yeah. On a diesel. But, I mean, that sort of goes hand in hand. We're getting new trains for the Great Western, and they will be longer and will have more capacity.
And that's going to be better for people with jobs. You'll be able to get more on.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, you know, the overcrowding is a huge problem across the railway network, so more capacity is always welcome. And if you can get to your job a little bit quicker, or you can get a little bit further in the same amount of time, that's good for commuting as well. That's offering, you know, more job opportunities.
And also improved connections would also help people get to work quicker.
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, that's one of the problems with a sort of fragmented railway, that you've got different train operating companies who may not necessarily be inclined to help each other out. So you're absolutely right. Important connections are very important.
Why do we have to put up with the ugly overhead power lines?
Well, I know they're not pretty. That's one of the disadvantages of electrification. But the only you've got to get the electricity to the train somehow. And the alternative is to use an electrified third rail, like they do on London Underground and in a lot of the South East. But the problem with third rail is that you can't really go very fast with it. You can't go them more than about 100 miles an hour, maybe 110. So if you had third rail, it would be actually slower, which is not what people want. And it's less reliable because it ices up, and it's actually more expensive because you need many more electricity substations along the line. And, you know, it's kind of regarded as slightly inferior technology. So the way forward is definitely overhead electrification, but sadly the price you pay for that is this slightly unpretty overhead line equipment.
So what successes have you had with the campaign, Bruce?
Well, you know, there's been, over the last, I don't know, 30 years or so, there have been a few reopenings, and, you know, some of which we can't take all the credit for, but we're delighted that, you know, we're getting electrification on the Great Western, the Midland Main Line, which is something we've been pushing for like, ever. Reopening of Portishead. I mean, again, these are things I can't take all the credit for, but there's things we've pushed for and we've contributed to campaigning for. There have been a number of successes in Scotland. Scotland in particular has been very good at reopening lines. There's the Waverley route, which opened just over a year ago, and that's been, just less than a year ago, actually. It's been a huge success. And in so many cases, you know, where you reopen a line, the number of passengers hugely exceeds the number forecast. And it seems that, you know, that people who are forecasting traffic for rail are being unduly pessimistic, really, which means that some railway lines that, you know, should be reopened aren't being yet. I mentioned Portishead, didn't I? And there's things in the pipeline, I suppose, that we're still pushing for. There's plenty more to do, you know, like Saltford Station we'd like reopened, improved service on the Severn Beach line, and there's sort of unglamorous things that people don't notice, like, you know, the redoubling of a railway line, you know, Swindon to Kemble, for instance. That used to be a single track line, it's now a double track line, and people won't notice the difference very much, but it means that more trains can travel on that line, means it's more reliable, it means in the future we could have a more frequent service, and so on. So it's glamorous things as well as sort of behind the scenes things that we push for.
What's the Filton Bank all about?
Well, the Filton Bank is the bit of main line that runs between Bristol Temple Meads and Bristol Parkway, and it goes right past the studio here, actually, you know, through Montpellier and... Actually, not Montpellier, I'm wrong, but Lawrence Hill up to Filton, that bit. And it is the railway equivalent of the M5. So it's a major route, and yet there are only two tracks there. Now, there used to be four tracks, and in the 1970s, as a kind of economy measure, they reduced it to two. And the problem with that is that you have local trains, like the Severn Beach line, and stopping trains, and slow freight trains, which are having to mix with high-speed intercity services. And that causes congestion and causes a bottleneck, and it prevents us having a more frequent service on the Severn Beach line. So what the good news is that those extra tracks are being put back. It'll be returned to a four-track railway, meaning that the slow stopping trains aren't going to interfere with the high-speed intercity services. So we'll have more reliable services, possibly slightly faster services intercity, and a more frequent local service, which is good news for everyone.
Is Pilning Station closing?
Well, that's been in the news because Network Rail want to remove the passenger footbridge, and the reason they want to remove it is because they're putting in overhead wires for electrification, and they could rebuild it and raise it, but that would cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds, if not millions, and they just want to avoid that expenditure. So Pilning Station is technically open, but there's only one train a day, or is it even one train a week, I can't remember, running in each direction, so practically it's not usable. And this is what's called a parliamentary service. If a very occasional train stops there, they can say, well, look, the station's still open, we haven't closed it, and they don't have to go through the official closure procedure, which, you know, involves all sorts of objections and so on. And so they technically keep it open, even though practically it isn't. Now, there is proposed development around Pilning, and also add to that the general context of rail becoming more and more popular. You know, rail passenger numbers have doubled over the last 20 years. That means that there is potential in the future for Pilning Station. But what Network Rail want to do is remove the passenger footbridge and demolish one of the platforms, so they'll have one train running once a week in one direction only, which is completely useless. And that just makes it even harder to reopen in the future. So, you know, or to improve services there in the future, to make it a practical, usable railway station. And so that's why, you know, campaigners such as us and various other local campaigners are up in arms about this. We want the platform retained so that in future, and hopefully in the not too distant future, a usable service can be reinstated at Pilning.
But sort of the reason we're in the position we're in now, with fewer trains than there were, say, in the 60s, is because of the Beechin report. And I heard that was done, they did the sort of groundwork for all the changes during the school holidays.
Oh, there was, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's all sorts of dirty tricks involved around about the beaching and the justification for the closure of some of the lines. Yeah, I mean, the real scandal is a guy called Ernest Marples, who was the transport minister, and he had major shareholding in a road construction company. Oh, so no conflict of interest there. It was absolutely outrageous, you know. So he was well motivated to shut down railways so that he could, you know, justify building more roads and make huge profits for his company. And Beeching was brought in as the sort of axe man to shut down these supposed... I mean, Beeching, you know, Beeching's job was to make the railways profitable. It was imagined that if you just cut out these unprofitable branch lines and kept this sort of profitable core, then the railways would make money again. But of course, he failed to realise that the unprofitable branch lines fed passengers into the profitable main lines. And so, you know, there were ridiculous assumptions that he supposed that if you shut down a branch line, someone would drive to the nearest mainline station and then pick up the train, which of course they wouldn't. They'd just drive all the way to wherever they were going in the first place. But so, yeah, amongst the dirty tricks were, you're quite right, you know, passenger counts during very quiet periods, seaside resorts, for instance. What would happen? Imagine a busy seaside resort. Well, you'd buy your ticket from a city, travel, buy a return ticket to your seaside resort, and then use the return portion back. So the ticket sales at the seaside resorts themselves were relatively low, and based on that, these stations were closed, even though actually they were making loads of money. And what else? They, you know, they failed to take into account the future growth of towns that, you know, obviously the population of Britain has grown hugely since the 60s, and you know, it was known that towns were going to get better and that demand for rail travel might go up, and it refused to take into account the lower cost, because this was during the age of steam still largely, and diesel trains would be cheaper to run, and it failed to take into account the fact that, you know, with a diesel train it would be cheaper to run and might be profitable, and so on and so on. There's a fantastic book all about it, The Great Railway Conspiracy, which tells you all about these dirty tricks and how, you know, we nearly lost railways entirely. But yeah, it's a very dark episode, and you know, we're doing our best to reverse Beeching, but it's very, very difficult.
What's the chances of stations like Ashley Down and my own station, which was St Anne's, opening again?
It's certainly not out of the question. Ashley Down, I think, is a strong case for, although they want to move it and combine it. They can't open it in the where it used to be. That generally speaking, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons, but one of the reasons is that generally speaking, regulations don't allow railway stations to be built on curves. They have to be built on straight lines for safety reasons. Salford has a very strong campaign, and I think that that has a very strong chance of happening in the near future. St Anne's Park, a little lower down the priority list, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out in the longer term. Maybe there's a case for it.
You'd have to build all the station buildings again.
Yeah.
Which, that wouldn't cost much, but then they reckon the car parking's a problem there.
Car parking's certainly a factor, because obviously you need to provide it, because you know, you don't want clogging up the local residential roads. So I mean, you'd be horrified to learn how expensive it is to build a platform, actually. Generally speaking, new stations, you know, they're not as pretty as the old ones, where you had, you know, lovely brick buildings. Now you just have a sort of like a bus shelter on the platform. It's not so good, sadly, but it kind of works. It's better than nothing. But yeah, I mean, the costs of reopening railway stations are sadly huge.
What other campaigns are you involved with?
Well, nothing apart from Rail Future. I mean, I'm trying to think of other schemes that we're pushing for. Yeah. Uckfield Lewis is one in the southeast, which again I think has a very strong case. It's a short section of track that has been taken out of use, and it would provide it's possibly part of a scheme to provide an alternative route from Brighton to London, because the Brighton main line is really overcrowded. But Uckfield Lewis in itself, you know, has a very, very strong case. Lewis to London that way would also be very, very much more convenient, I think. We campaigned for electrifying the Gosbloke Barking line. That's happening, which is great news. I'd like to see part of the Great Central extended north out of or towards Leicester, maybe as far as Rugby. Because Chiltern Main Line has been hugely successful in its expansion plans and in just attracting passengers. It's, you know, it's a really well-managed franchise. You know, there's a list of long as your arm, really. I mean, there are some, you know, clearly some railway lines that are just no-hopers and are never going to be reopened. So, and I think we've got to be careful that we're sort of pushing for realistic targets. But, you know, the successes we've had in Scotland and in Wales, you know, show that it's not pie in the sky, that these things are realistic and prove to be hugely successful. And I've absolutely no doubt as well that Portishead is going to be a huge success. I reckon, let me predict now that almost from the day it opens, it's going to be overcrowded. Because, you know, if you drive from Portishead to Bristol during rush hour, it can easily take you more than an hour, whereas the train will take you about 17 minutes. Electrification, we'd like to see that go as far as Weston-super-Mare. We think that's a big mistake in the current electrification plans. Longer term, we want to electrify all the way down to the southwest, down to Exeter, or between Birmingham and Bristol. I think there's a very strong case for that as well. The list just goes on and on.
What do you think of Metrobus?
I think Metrobus is a big pile of poo. I mean, it is a monstrous, stinking turkey that is going to just waste £100 million and provide zero transport benefits. Let me explain how Metrobus came around, because there's a thing called a guided bus. Okay, trains, as I've explained, you know, railway lines are quite expensive, trains are quite expensive, and buses tend to be a bit cheaper. And yet, trains are better at attracting people. If you put on a new train line or train service, people will use it. They're less enthusiastic about buses. So if you want to attract people out of their cars, it's got to be built on rails. But there's a sort of halfway house called a guided bus, which is where the bus travels between two concrete curbs, if you like, and it's got wheels sticking out the side horizontally that steer the bus down this channel between the curbs. And you know, some smart aleck in the government thought, well, actually, you know, if it's like a train, even though it's a bus, it's guided, and it's cheaper, so let's have a few. Let's offer some money to get some guided buses. And there was a very notorious one in Cambridge, which took over a huge railway line, which we campaigned against, you know, because it should have been reopened as a railway, and we failed, and it became a guided bus, and it hasn't been very successful, and there have been a few accidents. There's another one in Luton Dunstable, which isn't great. But the government is offering money for for guided bus projects, and some idiot at the council said, "Oh, I know, there's money. Where can we put a guided bus?" And they came up with this ludicrous scheme. Rather than starting off, what are the transport needs of Bristol? It's what can we do to get this money? And the answer is to make a guided bus route. So the Metrobus is a scheme chasing funding, which involves it's not new. This is the thing. The thing about Metrobus, it involves redirecting existing bus routes. So there's no new bus routes. It's the same bus routes going down a different route through these guided bus channels, which may actually, you know, which may go where people don't want to go, which may actually, because there are so many short sections of guided bus, it may end up making the buses slower because they'll have to stop start as they go in and out of the, the guided bus. It is a monstrous turkey, and whoever dreamt it up wants their ass kicking from Temple Meads to Ashton Gate, really. It's a scandal, really, that we're wasting so much public money on such a pile of crap. George Ferguson promised to scrap it. He failed. He let us down on that. It's probably too late to stop it now, but it will be a disaster. It'll be a waste of money.
And it's upset a lot of people.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, you know, the construction works, are causing disruption. Yeah, you heard about this over Christmas, working on it on Christmas Day, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning or something ridiculous like that. And of course, we're not happy because it's built partly on a railway line or a disused railway line. And those disused railway lines should be preserved for future rail use, not converted into bus lanes.
But where they're at it, they might as well bring back the trams.
Well, this is the thing, you see. You're absolutely right. These are trams on the cheap. And the propaganda said that they'll have the look and feel of trams. No, they won't. They'll have the look and feel of buses because they're basically buses. Mm. So we need a tram system. You know, the tram systems is another example, you know, of places such as Nottingham and Croydon, where they've introduced these trams and they've been hugely successful. Mm. And Nottingham in particular is a wonderful success story. Edinburgh less so. Edinburgh has been controversial, but I think, you know, in the long term it'll prove to be a success. Yeah, I mean, trams are the way forward for inner city public transport.
Edinburgh's got good buses, cheap buses as well.
Right, okay. I've never used them. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-bus. Buses are great, you know. Buses have a huge role to play in public transport, but they're not equivalent to trains. That's the important point. And we push for better rail services.
And Bristol is one of the only places where the bus station is near the rail station.
Yeah, where's the joined-up thinking there? It's ludicrous, isn't it? You know, we should have a bus station at Temple Meads. That would make a lot more sense, wouldn't it? So you have seamless transfer between buses and trains. I don't know whether anyone's going to make that happen in the near future.
Yeah, something you might be able to tell me, Bruce. Why is Temple Meads station now closed at night?
I've absolutely no idea. Maybe because there's no trains running at night.
No, but it means that if someone's got to get a connection in the morning, they have to find a hotel for the night.
I wasn't aware of that. No, I mean, I suspect the answer is simply that, you know, it requires staff to staff the station overnight, and they're making cuts there. But I mean the last trains come in around about 1 a.m, I think, don't they? And then the earliest are probably about 5:30. So it's a relatively short period. I'll look into that one. I'll get back to you.
The last two train journeys I went on, both times I was delayed at Cheltenham, of all places, where you think nothing much would happen.
Yeah,
and it was, you know, because law abiding. And one was for a suicide,
right?
You know, somewhere on the network, and the other was people trespassing on the line.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, can't they do anything about that?
Well, not really. I mean, the delay at Cheltenham might have been way up and down the line. You know what I mean? So if you imagine a series of trains, they all sort of hold each other up. It may not have been in Cheltenham. Yeah, I mean, sadly, you know, people do use the railways to commit suicide, and it's distressing, not just for the victims' families, but also for the driver of the train as well, and inevitably causes disruption. I mean, you know, the Britain's railways are generally fairly well fenced off. I mean, in the USA, they just have them completely unfenced and open, you know. But to make them completely suicide-proof, I think, would be practically impossible.
But would electrification mean that you'd be given you'd get a shock if you touched it?
No, fortunately. Well, actually, that's another disadvantage of third rail. I thought about it, actually. If you step on the third rail, you could get killed because it's electrified. Mm. Whereas the overhead lines are generally out of reach, so in that regard, it's actually quite a lot safer. And also from the point of view of wildlife, animals such as badgers get killed on the third rail until they learn to avoid it, whereas there's no danger of electrification with overhead line.
Your campaign's got a website, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're railfuture.org.uk. And there's all sorts of stuff on there. You know, there's bits of advice about cheaper tickets and so on. There's campaign news. There's stuff where we've appeared in the media. You can look that up and listen back to clips of us on the radio or see us on TV and so on, or where we've appeared in the press. You know, we appear in the press quite often. Actually, we're making noise. We're doing our best to keep shouting out in favour of railways.
Are you anti-car?
No, not particularly. I own a car myself, you know. I mean, and the car has certain uses that, that can't be replaced by rail. But it is true that many journeys can be replaced by rail. And in many cases, I mean, I mentioned Portishead earlier. In many cases, people would rather travel by rail if that option was available. I don't suppose many people enjoy the commute from Portishead to Bristol, and they would be more than happy to ditch their cars and get on a train that's going to be about three or four times quicker. So, no, we're not anti-car, but we like to provide the alternative.
Do you want to go back to the age of steam?
Steam trains are lovely, but they're not, you know, they're not realistic or practical. I mean, having said that, you know, we campaign for a sort of modern railway. We're looking forward. That's why we're called Rail Future. But the heritage lines, the steam lines, whilst they may not be a practical form of transport, they do contribute hugely to the tourist economy. And actually, we have more heritage lines in the UK than the whole of the rest of Europe. For some reason, we're mad about heritage railways. So, you know, they're doing a great job, and they provide employment. They contribute to tourism. They're well loved. They keep people busy in their retirement. They're a great asset, and also they also prevent railway lines from being built on, which is another good thing. So yeah, it's all great, but no, we want a modern electric railway. That's what the economy needs.
Any last things on the subject, Bruce?
Well, I could carry on forever. I mean, I'd love you to join us. railfuture.org.uk. I think it's about 18 quid a year to join. I should know off the top of my head. You got it in front of you. And just to mention, there, you know, we're not the only ones campaigning for better railways. There's the Transport for Greater Bristol Alliance, the Portishead Rail Group, the Friends of Suburban Bristol Railways. And so there's many other campaigners, you know, that are sort of pushing in the same direction as us. You know, let's keep going for a better railway locally.
Right, thanks. Anyway, very much, very interesting. I can't believe how much there is to know about it.